Welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Dan Fisher. Coming up, we're going to talk with Russell Holly of Geek.com about what he saw and experienced at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas last week. Joining us right now, though, we're going to talk about social media. It's more than just a passing fad. I think everybody's come to accept that. In fact, for those involved in the media or advertising or any communication field, social media provides essential tools for reaching people, and it's a fundamental part of what they do now. A local organization called Social Media Club Columbus wants to bring together people from all walks of life to explore the best ways to use the social media toolbox. They gather tonight to talk about the top trends in social media for 2013. To learn more about that, you can go to the link at WOSU.org/allsides and check it out. But joining us now for our very own preview is Samantha Rufo. She's vice president of the Social Media Club Columbus. Welcome, Samantha.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here today.
So we were talking beforehand. Social Media Club was founded about 4 to 5 years ago, so not long after social media really became a popular concept.
Correct. And actually, the global organization, which Social Media Club Columbus is a portion of, I think they were, again, just maybe 5 or 6 years ago, Columbus was pretty fast moving into the global organization being established. And really, the whole point, it's not just for businesses, it's for students. It's for anyone that really is trying to understand social media, how to make it more effective for them. And we try to do a lot of different things to keep people social, which is really the part of the club. So tonight, which is the event at Gresso's at 6:30, it's going talking about the top trends. And, you know, people think, okay, is social media, you know, what can change? Well, in the social media world, it's not just by year. You know, some people think that you have a trends by year. Really, it's almost by month. You know, there's constantly
right.
new
3 weeks.
Yeah. You know, anything, you know, 5 years ago, it's almost like dinosaur days. So, you know, really the every month there's something new that's coming up. And that's what we're trying to do is help people to understand what to do with all these new things that are coming.
A friend of mine who's in business for herself, she's a consultant. She tweeted me the other day and said, how do you retweet? And I thought, oh, my gosh. Seriously? And I wondered, you know, this was before I knew about your club, but that kind of a person, are you welcoming to somebody at that level?
Oh, sure. And it's and that's what's interesting and awesome about the organization, because there's complete beginners to people that do it for a living. So a huge portion of what we do is education. And having the education, which has actually gotten better and better. I mean, it's interesting. One of the trends that you have today is sophistication. Where, you know, 3 years ago, when companies were looking to hire social media people, they were thinking, oh, let's get an intern to do it. Okay, well, now they're realizing, gee, these people control our brand. You know, we've spent 20, 30, 40 years building up this company name. Our entire reputation is resting on this person that's talking in social media about us. So now people are realizing, wow, we really need people with credentials to be doing this. And a lot of universities like OSU, I'm sure, now have many more classes that deal with that, too.
My guest is Samantha Rufo. She's vice president of the Social Media Club of Columbus. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You mentioned a trend can be, you know, month-by-month basis. How do you define a trend in social media? It seems like it is a trend.
You know what? It's almost crowdsourcing. And, you know, I'll say some terms and then I'll define them, because not everyone is going to know what those are, but crowdsourcing is where you have a group of people. It can be 50, 100, 1,000, 100,000 that come together around a similar idea. So things that become trends are things that all of a sudden have huge amounts of people that follow. So we try to predict, you know, what are going to be the things that people are going to be really excited about in the next year. Like, for example, one of the things I found pretty cool that's out there that nobody really knows about yet, it's actually called Chirpify. And you're just talking about Twitter. If I wanted to actually buy something, I could just tweet back, buy. And immediately it'll come out of my Twitter account, done. I want to send you some money. I actually say pay with a tweet, and we've just completed a transaction. So it's really moving into those.
You can do that right now?
Yes. on Chirpify. So again, you know, we try to highlight, what are some of these really cool things that are coming out? And, you know, some people think, oh, Columbus isn't that technological. It really is. I mean, we were one of the first cities to really have social media club. And there's, because of the amount of businesses that are here and OSU, we actually have a really good push into this world, which is another thing that businesses need to keep up with. So it's actually important to keep an eye on what's going on.
When I first started using social media, Facebook maybe 4.5 years ago, and then Twitter, it wasn't like this. But now I tend to block Facebook friends and Twitter followers, or anyone who follows me on Twitter that who are always trying to sell me something constantly, or get me to go to hear their band or check out their restaurant, because that's the only time they contact me. Am I alone on that score?
You know what? As a celebrity, you're going to see something a little bit different than most other people. So your experience is going to be a tad different. But that's actually kind of the cool portion of it, because you may be able to talk to people that otherwise you never would have been able to.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is celebrity and social media is defined differently. So it's not just that you're Ashton Kutcher.
I certainly am not, by the way. And celebrity is
general.
A very strong word, but go ahead.
But the point is the fact that he's got a million plus followers. That's what makes a celebrity in social media. So it's really more about how many people you are able to communicate with that makes you the celebrity. And of course, anytime with that, people feel they have a direct connection to you, because mm-hmm. social media is personal. It's something that you can actually give your thoughts and ideas, and so people become more attached to you than necessarily if they were just reading an article or something along those lines.
What are some of the things that, or tools, I guess, that are available now that weren't even a year ago? You mentioned
Chirpify.
How do you spell that?
It's actually Chirpify.
Chirpify, okay.
And that's a new one. Actually, here's one I think you'll really like. There's another one called Chirp, so just the short portion of that.
This is all play on tweet.
Yeah.
Gotcha, okay.
And it's actually sharing using sound. So say, for example, I have an image here that talks about all the different things about Facebook and how to do and what's important about it, and I want to share it with your listeners. I could actually take a picture of it, and then using Chirp, it will actually make like a squeaking robotic sound that anyone else that has Chirp on their phones, it would immediately download to their phone. So it's something you can do individually. You can do across massive audiences. So these kind of tools are developing and growing as people see the needs for it. So, you know, now really the tools are more becoming how to manage social media. That's a huge portion, because, you know, even someone that has maybe 10 followers on Twitter is going to be getting hundreds of posts all day long. So you start to get to 1,000, 10,000. Now it's almost impossible to keep up with unless you're on it all day long. And then reporting is another huge portion of it. People want to know all this. What are we going to do with all this data? And how can we make it more effective for our businesses? So there's tools out there like Hootsuite. Facebook has tools for managing pages if you're a business. So it's primarily, there's free tools and paid tools. You just have to figure out what's going to work for you.
What do we know about how businesses are able to measure the effectiveness of their social media campaigns?
You know, usually when I talk to a business and they ask that question, I say, okay, what is your goal? Because some people, the goal may be, I just want to get a ton of people. I want to have a ton of fans on my Facebook page. I want to have a ton of followers on Twitter. Okay, so if the point is you're trying to get the people so you have someone to talk to, then that's going to be a goal. But once you get to a certain point, your goal has to be engagement. How often are you talking to people? Are you having a conversation? And I know people always go back to that. It's like a cocktail party, and that's become the old thing to say. But I still really believe it, because on social media, just like at a cocktail party, if you walk up to someone and just say, you just start talking everything about yourself, never let them say a word, they're going to walk away because, wow, that's enough. But if you have good conversation, you don't put your foot in your mouth, you're pretty good to go. You will actually draw more people and have more conversations. Same thing in social media. It's just you've taken what happens in the real world and put it into the virtual one.
My guest, once again, Samantha Rufo. She's vice president of the Social Media Club of Columbus. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Is Facebook passé and Twitter the new horizon, or are they just evolving, both of them?
My first reaction is, oh, my gosh, I can't believe she said that. Facebook's not going anywhere. And I've been a huge proponent of it since the beginning, because what they've been doing, and they change things constantly, but now with the timeline, you have your entire life there. So even for me, when I'm on vacation, I'll take pictures, not necessarily to show friends or share what I'm doing, but to keep up so that I can go back a year later and look at all my pictures. So it's kind of a virtual photo album. So now that people's lives are there, it's not going anywhere. I mean, I'm a proponent of Facebook for businesses, too, because go where the people are. And actually, I just saw a report yesterday. You know, the top search engine is Google, and then the second top website is Facebook. And it's actually even becoming higher. So it's just the way that people communicate and how they're doing their lives now. So, and I'm even such a fan, I have stock in Facebook. So, you know, I really believe that they're
going to continue. Did you buy it when it was low or when it was high?
$18.
Oh, good for you.
So, and actually, when you talk about Twitter, even they're growing and evolving. What's interesting is, and really, the millennials are what's driving everything. They're the largest generation in history, so basically anyone 30 and under. So it's basically what they want, and we just kind of follow along. And once they actually realized that all their parents were going onto Facebook, they moved over to Twitter. And now that they realize that so now Twitter has become a bigger network in what they're doing. And even Twitter now has realized they have to provide more value. So they're even coming up with a new network called Medium that's really more of a blogging network. It's more of having longer conversations. So, and that was because people said, hey, Twitter is just too short. We really would like to have more things than just text. We want pictures. We want video. We want other things. So those all really come from what people are asking or looking for at the time.
Well, Samantha Rufo, I want to thank you for joining us today to talk about it. I'm sure we didn't get to half of what you had planned, but there's more trends, so maybe more conversation ahead.
That is true. Thank you so much.
Samantha Rufo, she's vice president of Social Media Club of Columbus. Once again, if you want to learn more about that, there's a link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. They have a meeting coming up, I think, tonight.
So
check it out if you're interested. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
As you pick out your new reading glasses, you got to go see the doctor, choose good frames, get high-quality lenses. It adds up, you know, and it may all be lining one pocket.
If you walk into a Lens Crafters and you see 50 different brands of glasses, most people don't realize that all those brands are owned by the same company that also owns Lens Crafter.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Why new spectacles are going to cost you next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace tonight at 6 on 89.7 NPR News. And thanks for joining us today. Expect some sunshine and a high of 35. There's a chance of rain for tonight. We could see some snow flurries as well, a low of 29 degrees. Mostly cloudy on Wednesday, gradually some sunshine peeking through, a high of 38. Partly cloudy Wednesday night, a low of 27 degrees, and then more sunshine and a high of 36 on Thursday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
The Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas ended on Friday. The annual event brings together many of the biggest companies and startups hoping to unveil the next big thing. This year's show took up more floor space than ever before and attracted more than 150,000 attendees. But did they find what they're looking for? To find out, we are joined by tech blogger for Geek.com, Russell Holly. He was in Las Vegas all last week. Welcome, Russell.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
We have you for an extended version today. Is there that much to talk about? I mean, did you walk away feeling like lots to say?
There were so many different things there that fit a variety of categories. I mean, when they say consumer electronics, it fits a really broad range, you know, not just gadgets that are coming out, but also services that are being released and you know, just kind of every shape and size. So, I mean, there's definitely plenty of you know, things, whether or not they're particularly interesting, I guess, is up to you.
We've talked about it before. Apple doesn't go. Microsoft doesn't go.
Microsoft had actually gone every year up until this one, and despite Microsoft not having a big booth on the floor, Ballmer of Microsoft was actually at one of the was speaking at one of the keynote presentations, the one done by Qualcomm.
But still, I mean, there was a different feel, if I remember correctly, that a lot more startups this year.
There was definitely a lot more startups this year. There were a lot of smaller companies who had, you know, kind of new prototype, you know, things that they were showing off where the products, you know, weren't quite finished yet. And in the past, we've gotten, you know, a bit of that where, you know, it's been, you know, here's my idea, here's, you know, the thing that I've been working on. But it's not usually been in such high volume. It was everything this year from, you know, from you know, television accessories to, you know, very, very small accessories for the iPhone, just, you know, all of these different startups that had, you know, these really, you know, interesting and unique ideas. But you know, very few of them in that aspect were, you know, finished products.
I was reading, I don't know if it was Forbes or what, but they said the burning question that will haunt any visitor to CES is this: just how many phone cases and headsets does it take to keep a person happy? That person said, he said, my rough calculations are that one quarter of the show floor was filled with bling headsets.
Oh, absolutely. There were so many. And you know,
from celebrities.
Headphones and all kinds of things like that, you know, especially as they're looking at, you know, accessories. And one of the things that I actually thought was kind of interesting this year was that, you know, in previous years, they've kept all of the mobile accessories to contain it in an area that they've called the iLounge. And this year, it was really spread all over the place. You know, they had the iLounge still, but you know, as you pointed out, you know, the celebrity sponsored, you know, mobile equipment was all over the place.
Yeah, I'm just trying to imagine headsets hyped by like, well, Snooki, Tim Tebow. Ludacris.
Well, so Tim Tebow was part of a larger marketing campaign for a set of headphones. That had, you know, a bunch of different celebrities for the same brand. Each one of them had a different set of headphones that were, you know, I guess, tuned specifically to the likings of that celebrity. And they were being marketed as, you know, these are the headphones that this person wears, where they all sounded a little different.
So, Russell Holly, what's the one thing? What was your top item? What did you walk away thinking about?
Well, the thing that I'm still thinking about really was this headset that I put on. It's far from what I would consider something that the average person would pick up and wear, but it was called the Oculus Rift, and it's a peculiar name for a kind of a peculiar product. It's a set of almost you know, kind of like the old virtual reality goggles that used to, you know, be really popular in malls.
Right.
Is using, you know, kind of current generation technology to accomplish a very real version of that.
Yeah, I see a picture of you here with it on now in your blog. What does it do? What are you looking at?
So what's actually going on there? There's two different screens that are in these concave lenses, and when you put that very light piece of plastic and strapping on your head, your entire visual field. When you open your eyes, you don't see any. You see nothing but what is being presented on those displays, and the displays are curved in such a way, and the software is complementing those curves in such a way that what you're looking at is the information that's being displayed from the computer. You know, maybe a game or you know, some kind of program that would take advantage of the three-dimensional you know, aspects of the software, and puts your entire head in this game, so that when you move left and right with your head, the game character moves left and right, up and down. And it was incredibly immersive in that, you know, it moved, you know, with the, you know, pretty much with the exact precision of how your head would move in reality. So, you know, when you were looking around in these games, and in the last, I guess, you know, 5 years really, especially computer games have, you know, grown so realistic that, you know, it was really impressive to put the helmet on and, you know, have this, you know, kind of fantasy character with a sword walk past me. And because I had, you know, audio to go with it, you know, I could hear as the person was walking by me, and I could see them as they were walking by me. But, it, you know, there was nothing else in my eyes. I couldn't see anything else but what was going on in the game.
They used Kickstarter to get their financing or to find partners. Is this something that's going to be available immediately?
They had an incredibly successful Kickstarter, and as a result, they were able to ramp up their production way faster than what they originally intended. So on top of the Kickstarter that is already completed and the developer units that are going to be shipping within the next couple of weeks, they also have a pre-order up on their website. And from what I understood after talking with them for a couple of minutes, the pre-order is going to happen immediately after all of the orders from the Kickstarter are completed. So within the next 4 to 6 weeks, if you are taking advantage of the pre-order, you're going to be able to use an Oculus Rift headset just like the people who participated in the Kickstarter. You'll only be 1 or 2 weeks behind.
So how much is it going to cost?
They haven't given a price for the consumer version yet, and the developer version, I think, was something like $250. And it's really kind of an impressive piece of technology, but it's like I said, it's definitely not it's definitely not something you would expect to see in every home, in front of every computer, because it requires a fairly specific kind of, you know, video game player to really be interested in that. But it's something that I think will continue to grow as we look at a lot of different ways that we interact with computers, especially now as companies are moving towards touch screens and put your hand out without touching the screen and still interact with the computer and using your voice. There's a lot of those kind of things that was happening this year, where it was, you know, how to use the computer without touching it or pressing buttons.
My guest is Russell Holley, blogger, tech blogger for Geek.com. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas last year, the big annual event. Russell was there for the whole week. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I read something kind of interesting. This was in a report by The Verge that CNET editors had already voted on the best of CES winner when news came down from corporate that they had to change their vote and drop the Hopper entirely. It's a device that lets you jump through commercials.
So, kind of. It's not a whole lot different from every other DVR. It just does some of the things automatically, and that's where the company took issue.
Oh, okay.
CBS took issue because the Hopper works very much like any other DVR. It just has software in it that will grab all of the primetime shows as they're airing, and it stores all of them automatically without needing you to say, hey, I want you to grab these primetime shows. It grabs them and stores them for a week so that you can go back and watch them as you choose. But what it does with the commercials is it automatically has software that stops recording and then starts recording again when the commercials are set. In my opinion, this really isn't all that different from, you know, how TiVo or how any other DVR works. The only difference is that you don't have to fast forward through the commercials. But I've never met a person who owns a DVR, who owns a TiVo, who intentionally sits through the commercials when they've recorded something. You know, it's something that you skip through anyway. So this seemed really just kind of semantically different, you know, and that was why a lot of the different broadcast companies are upset, not just CBS.
Mm-hmm.
It was really unfortunate to see, you know, kind of how that played out.
All right. So we talked about this last week, the big TVs. Super high definition, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah. Every major company right now is working on what are called 4K TVs. And there are a bunch of other companies, including NVIDIA, and then Sony and Microsoft, I'm sure, over the next year, doing things that are capable of supporting 4K television. This isn't really all that different from when Blu-ray came out or when high-definition television started to become popular. It's going to be a little while before I'm going to be interested in putting a 4K television in my house just because of the cost. And I don't think many people are going to be terribly different. I saw 4K televisions ranging from $12,000 to $60,000 at the Consumer Electronics Show. And really, you know, I can see those kind of for industrial uses maybe, but I doubt that I'm going to go to a friend's house and see one of them sitting in their living room anytime soon.
Well, they needed a new car this year, so they had to put off buying the TV set.
Exactly.
Big phones. I read that Apple went to 4 inches this year, but they're getting bigger. Android's going to 5 or even 6. Is that a trend, or what's going on with that?
There are so many manufacturers right now that are working on 5-inch phones or larger, and really, I kind of feel like that the gap between 4-inch and 5-inch is really where phones should be, that kind of 4.5. But it could also just be that, what we really need is a 5-inch screen with no, kind of plastic or anything on either side so that it's easier to hold. But that's going to be something that I think is going to be increasingly popular this year. It's going to be the manufacturers who are releasing the larger phones. And the biggest reason, I think, for, aside from having the larger, more beautiful screen, is that it gives the manufacturer more room to put other things in and manage things with heat and make the phone thinner, and, it'll be less of an issue. And both Qualcomm and NVIDIA, announced a new line of processors that are significantly more powerful, capable of really just tremendous things. We're overseeing processors that, are made by companies who have a history in smartphones, are now making processors that are completely capable of running, full computer operating systems, where we're going to see the same processor running Windows 8 as they were, running Android in a smartphone. And so this year, I think, is going to be, kind of a big deal for blurring the line between, we joke around a lot and say that, we have these tiny computers in our pocket. And I think that line is going to get really blurry this year.
When you're at CES, can you see what people are enthused about? Can you see what's clicking with people? Is it obvious?
Definitely not hard to see. I mean, anywhere, you see a lot of the booths, even though it's several massive halls that people walk around in all day long for several days, the booths that get the most attention are the ones that, have so many people surrounding them all day long. And that was a big thing for a lot of these companies. And anytime you go to a convention like this, there's kind of a universal rule that the best of the booths have kind of the least attractive people there because the products sell themselves, and that's definitely true of CES.
And is it the sort of experience where you get to try everything?
For the most part, I mean, like I said, there were a lot of companies this year that had prototypes for a lot of things. There was a company who is working on an iPhone accessory that I thought was incredibly cool. It was you barely even know it's there. You stick it in the headphone jack, and it uses the power from your iPhone and an application to take your headphone jack and turn it into a laser pointer. So you can use it for presentations or anything like that. But it's this tiny little nub that's no bigger than a headphone jack, and when you stick it in, the other end of the headphone jack is now a laser pointer that you can use. It's a low power, red dot laser that you can use for anything. And the company was planning on releasing them for less than $20. And I can't think of a cheaper way to play with my cat and do that. But there's also, kind of the more ridiculous and kind of more fantastic. There was this mug. And I laughed when I thought about a high-tech coffee mug that didn't do something like keep the coffee warm or something like this. And it had an absolutely absurd name that I loved. It was called the Dubstein. And it was this massive coffee mug that had speakers and kind of buttons and a display on it. And the whole purpose was to sync to your phone. And you had this coffee mug, this big coffee mug that you walked around with that had speakers and Bluetooth connectivity to play music from your phone as you were walking around.
Does it have like an insert that you wash?
Yes, yeah, an insert that you wash. It even had a special insert for, Starbucks coffee cups and if you wanted to keep something cold versus keep something hot. I mean, they had really thought this out. There's a special insert for a beer bottle if you wanted to that in there. I mean, really, if you ask these guys, everyone really wants to walk around with a giant coffee mug that blasts music.
Well, or more importantly, they don't want to walk around with their phone.
Exactly.
Hanging out. How much did that cost?
They hadn't announced the price. This was a prototype. I didn't even get to see how loud it was. But it was this really impressive, you know, kind of scary-looking mug, really. It was this big thing that had a beer bottle in it, and it drew my attention because, for something that looked so utterly fantastic, it had to do something cool. And they sat and talked to me for a couple minutes about it. It was a really interesting idea.
Now, is that a small company that did that?
Absolutely. Yeah, this was a startup. This was the first time they'd ever, you know, come to a show like this and unveiled anything. The gentleman who talked to me, this was an idea that he had in his backyard, and his family all, you know, really kind of pushed him to try and get a production model ready. And they were really impressed by the response that they got at CES this year.
What did you see at CES that bombed for you?
The iPod-y.
The iPod-y?
Yes, this is a a potty training seat that you could dock an iPad into. And the idea just absolutely warped any perspective I had of the future of parenting. At first glance, it was in the middle of this kind of showroom floor area, there was this child training seat. It didn't look any different than any other, you know, potty chair that, you know, my kids all sat in while they were going through potty training, and it had this little plastic arm that stuck up from the front, and it was specifically designed so that the child could sit on the potty and have the iPad docked, you know, right there in this little plastic arm that held it while they sat there and played games, and, you know, they had a potty training app to go with it so that the kid could, you know, could go through and play with all this. And it just never in a million years would I have encouraged my son and my two daughters to play with electronics while they sat on the toilet. It was just never something that would have ever occurred to me.
Well, you don't know everything, Russell.
Absolutely. It's for me to say what parenting is or isn't, but that blew me away.
It bombed, but what was it getting much attention, or were people just watching it to laugh at it?
It was definitely something that people were watching to laugh at. It was one of those things where, you know, this company was obviously very proud of their you know, innovation and really felt that, you know, that this was the way to go. But most people who came in and looked at it did not take it very seriously at all.
My guest is Russell Holley. He's tech blogger for geek.com. If you have a question or comment for Russell, he's going to stay with us for the next segment. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can tweet us at WOSU All Sides or go to our Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
What's your job on the movie?
Producer.
Associate producer. What was the last movie you produced?
High and Dry.
Who paid for that?
CFDC.
What's your middle name? What's your middle name?
Leon?
Shoot him. He's an American spy.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Ben Affleck. At the Golden Globe Sunday, his film Argo won for Best Film Drama, and he won for Best Director. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 31 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today with a high of 35. There is a chance of a rain-snow mix tonight, maybe a half an inch of accumulation or a dusting, a low of 29 degrees, cloudy skies with some sunshine, and a high of 38 on Wednesday. And be prepared to laugh as Pioneers of Television presents Funny Ladies. It's tonight on WOSU-TV. See the first female stand-up comedians to appear on television and the sitcom stars who followed. Hear from Phyllis Diller, Joan Rivers, Betty White, and Tina Fey. Watch Funny Ladies tonight at 8 on WOSU-TV. Support comes from Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, announcing the opening of the Spirit of Women Park thanks to the generous support of the Ingram family. Located near the Wexner Medical Center, the Spirit of Women Park features thousands of tiles hand-painted by donors to honor special women in their lives. Medicalcenter.osu.edu. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Russell Holley, tech blogger for Geek.com. We're talking about his week at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas last year. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You wrote about the future of input, a look at Intel's perceptual computing. Were you talking about that earlier?
We talked about it a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
the thing here is, you know, the Intel's looking at a bunch of different ways, especially with, you know, as we're moving forward with, you know, kind of touch-enabled everything, you know, how we can use, you know, the other parts of our body to interact with computers.
And so it's as usual, it's hard to imagine, but this is just actually doing things, hand gestures in the air.
Well, it's a couple of different things. You have hand gestures in the air. There's essentially a 3D camera that tracks, the individual fingers and how your hands are moving and things like that. And it uses that to see you reach out and swipe your hand from left to right. And it takes that and understands that you're taking your hand and swiping from left to right. And this particular part of, you know, perceptual computing has existed for a little while now, especially with the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. Microsoft incorporated a lot of this in the Kinect part of Xbox 360, as you can use that to navigate through the Xbox menus. But the camera system for the Kinect is really big and really kind of clumsy and doesn't handle, you know, kind of fine detail particularly well. So Intel's been taking that technology and shrinking it down so that there's, you know, a lot better piece of technology that you can use to generate the same thing on a smaller screen.
And you also wrote about facial recognition and eye tracking, which is kind of like real futuristic sounding.
This is definitely the eye tracking thing was definitely something that caught me off guard. We've had, you know, kind of facial recognition unlocking systems for a little while now, but they've never been particularly secure. A lot of companies have found that you can take a picture of somebody and use it to unlock a computer the same way that you could just by standing there. And Intel thinks that they've done a lot to do away with that, but we're gonna see where that goes when they actually deliver that. But the eye tracking was really cool. It takes the same set of cameras that measures your hand and focuses them on your retinas and specifically where you're looking on the screen, and it takes that and uses that as a way to put the mouse on the screen. So instead of using your hand to move the mouse around, it would take the mouse and put it wherever your eyes are focusing on the screen.
Wow.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, I got to mess with it for a couple of minutes, and it was really fantastic to see, you know, how it worked out. And when they were doing the demonstration, Intel showed a company who was taking a look at Where's Waldo, you know, just a game version of Where's Waldo, and he was taking his eyes and kind of panning around on the image until he found Waldo, and it was really fantastic to see how accurate it was.
Peter in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome, Peter.
Hi. I just had a quick question about what the feeling of Ubuntu and the phone and tablet version, how you thought it would be received by people.
Is this a game or?
No.
I'm sorry. No, it's Linux. Linux is a open source operating system.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was a whole new operating system that was announced. And Canonical, the guys who make Ubuntu, have been kind of teasing it for a little while now, and I got to spend a little bit of time with it while I was in Vegas. It was really an interesting kind of fluid system. You know, it's definitely impressive to see where they go with this. I'm really excited to see, you know, when they announce an actual phone that, you know, will be able to test out. What they were demonstrating was, you know, was Ubuntu running on a previously Android-powered Galaxy Nexus. And so I don't see the adoption level being particularly high if they continue to go that route. But if, you know, when they're ready to release actual hardware, I think it's a really, you know, kind of powerful combination of taking that kind of desktop operating system environment and moving it into your hand, where you've got, you know, the sliding gestures that have been, you know, kind of increasingly popular across those operating systems.
All right, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to call and talk with Russell Holley, tech blogger for geek.com, you can go to 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think, when it comes to, for instance, the perceptual computing that you wrote about, is that something that's going to happen in the next year? Or is it something that's going to happen farther into the future? How fast are we talking about?
Well, so I think from a developer perspective, they're going to try and put this technology in the hands of developers this year. But from a user perspective, Intel really wants to take this technology, especially the 3D cameras, and get them small enough to a point that they can be directly embedded into Ultrabooks and tablets and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to take a little bit of time and some really clever engineering. Because right now, though, the technology that they're using is kind of a bulky camera that clips onto the top of the laptop, kind of like webcams in the early days of laptop computing. And so the big push for Intel right now is going to be to take that technology and make it small enough that it can fit into an Ultrabook. And at that point, I think we'll see a lot more of it.
I guess there's security implications, too. The Retina's distinctive, right? It's unique.
Well, what it's really tracking is just the motion of the eyeballs. I don't think it's actually tracking the eyeball itself.
Okay. What else?
So NVIDIA had a really interesting thing. A lot of people don't know NVIDIA as a company because they make graphic cards that go inside of, kind of higher-end computers and laptops and things like that. So, these are just kind of the bits inside of the computer, so a lot of people don't recognize the name. But they've been in the computer industry for a really long time, and they announced what they called Project Shield, which was a handheld gaming console that would be kind of competing with the PlayStation Portable and Nintendo's DS systems.
Mm-hmm.
But really, what they did was took their latest kind of mobile platform software that they use for Android, and they created this really kind of bulky gaming console that was like an Xbox controller with a screen on top. And that kind of raised a lot of really curious questions for me, because it doesn't seem like that would be particularly portable, when you consider how small and thin the Nintendo DS and the PlayStation Portable are. But it's also significantly more powerful in terms of what games it can play and the size of the screen and things like that. So what NVIDIA really did was, kind of create a handheld gaming console for young adults and people, my age. And I'm really curious to see where that goes and whether or not people decide that that's worth it, as opposed to just picking up a tablet or an iPad or something like that.
Well, what is the price?
They haven't announced the price yet. That was another big thing about CES this year.
How much does it cost?
Very little prices.
At CES, do they do much surveying?
There are definitely a lot of companies. The CEA, the association that maintains it, does a lot of surveying all throughout the year, really.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, you'll get a lot of follow-up from them?
Absolutely. Yeah, they'll be asking how I appreciated it and what things I would do different. And that's kind of a big thing for this year entirely, was that there were a lot of things, and then that's kind of one of the hazards of having, kind of prototype projects there, is that there's not pricing. But that also means that there's no guarantee that the product will ever actually, hit shelves at your local Best Buy or anything like that. And that's kind of a big deal, I think.
But most of the people there, was it 150,000+ attendees? Are they people like you? Are there that many of you out there? Or what are all the different reasons why people would go to CES?
Press are definitely kind of a fraction of who attends CES, people who attend specifically for the news aspect. But a lot of the companies that attend, they have everything from just kind of industry affiliates looking to enable partnerships and meet new organizations, to the actual booth presenters, and then buyers, companies like Best Buy or people who are interested in bulk purchases for medical purposes, like that, who would take this technology and either sell it in stores or apply it in kind of unique ways You see companies like GE who would show up and take a look at big projects for medical purposes and things like that.
Well, what kind of medical sorts of devices were there?
Well, so one of the big things we were talking about Oculus Rift earlier.
Yeah.
There was a company at GE who were really interested in seeing that as training for things like hands-on surgery and things like that.
Oh, a virtual experience then.
Exactly.
614-292-8513. We have 8513. We have Russell Holley for a few more minutes. If you want to give us a call, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you could put something on the market right away that you saw, what would it be?
NEC and Intel worked together to show off one of their new laptops. It was a new Ultrabook, and it was ridiculously thin and light. I was really surprised. It was almost lighter than my iPad. And that's kind of a big push that I think is going to happen this year, is things that are getting, kind of lighter and thinner in the Ultrabook area, so as to be different than tablets, because it still offers that mouse and keyboard interface. And NEC isn't a company that I've seen in the U.S. in probably 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's something that I would be really interested in seeing happen.
When an Ultrabook gets that light, are they more fragile?
They can be more fragile. It really depends on their construction. And the interesting thing about Ultrabooks is that there are no moving parts in most cases. The processor and the solid-state drive and things like that, the bigger ones have fans, but the smaller ones, especially the ones that are going to be coming out in the next year, they don't have a lot in the way of moving parts. So unless you're damaging the screen or hitting it so hard that you're cracking something on, maybe the motherboard or the solid-state drive that is powering it, then, there's not a whole lot you're going to do other than damaging the plastic.
Anything new on 3D printing?
There were a lot of companies that were showing off things for 3D printing, but not a whole lot in the way of new technology. A lot of that stuff was kind of released in the middle of this last year with MakerBot and a lot of the other companies that have tried to, kind of catch up. The big thing that I think is going to happen this year with 3D printing is that it's hard to describe, but the resolution, the quality of the print is going to get a lot better, so that you're not going to be able to feel lines when you run your thumb across something that's in 3D printed. It's going to feel smooth, as though it was cast in liquid plastic.
Britta and Amanda, you're on the air. Welcome, Britta.
Hi. I have a question for your guest. I have an iPad, and I use it every day, and I'm a student, and I would like to know there are so many apps out there, it's overwhelming. What's the best way to find apps that are suitable for me, make me more productive, and like productivity apps? There's just so much out there, it's almost impossible to figure it out.
It's definitely a challenge, especially with how big Apple's app store is, and it's a problem that Android tablets have as well, just because discoverability, when you have so many, it's a literal needle in a haystack problem. But Apple tries really hard to organize apps by productivity and things like that. So it really, when you say you're looking for a productivity app, I guess it would depend on what specifically you're looking for. If you're looking for some kind of time tracking or maybe something that handles files a little better. And from there, I guess, you could be a little more specific in search. But otherwise, there's not a whole lot out there, to kind of make it easier to search for that kind of thing. It really is kind of a growing problem.
Okay.
Too bad,
okay.
Britta.
Thank you. That's okay. Thanks. I just thought I'd try because they are really hard to find. I'd like to be able to use my iPad more like I use my laptop.
Interesting.
Well, do you want to do that?
I'm sorry?
In what way would you want to do that? Are you looking for
like I use Word documents to type up assignments or make notes or that type of thing, to be able to pull up Word documents and edit them and just more of that type of thing that I end up using my laptop for.
Russell?
I would definitely suggest that you give Google Drive a try on the iPad. I found that it was a really great word processor solution that accomplishes a lot of the tasks that you just suggested. And it works really well on the iPad. I actually use it pretty much every day.
And what is that called again?
It's called Google Drive.
Google Drive?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right.
No problem.
Take care, Britta.
All right, thanks.
Email from Jerry. He says, I'm a longtime Windows user and just bought a MacBook Pro. I haven't used an Apple computer since the Apple IIe. What are some things/tips a new user should know coming from Windows?
The big thing you'll need to know coming from Windows is that installing applications is very, very different. Instead of having to go through the long, complicated install process, you'll have an application and you just drag it into your dock and it's ready to go. And that's a process that took me a while to kind of adjust to, because I'm so used to the install process for Windows. But as a result, there's also the new, kind of app store for Apple. It's another requirement that you use it, but very much like the app store for, the iPad, the iPod, it does a pretty good job of, just kind of collecting all of the things that are possible and puts them in a pretty good place. But again, it's not a requirement that you use it. I would definitely spend some time in there first, and then there are so many applications. It's really, kind of hard to point in a specific direction.
It's kind of funny the way you describe it, Russell, as if it gets easier, but that's difficult.
Well, it's a workflow thing. It definitely have to kind of let it. And that's something that's it's not always easy for a lot of people to adjust to a new workflow when it comes to operating systems, because there's kind of a set way that you've been taught, and that's the way that most people, kind of almost out of fear, use their computer.
From Arlen on Facebook, are they getting close to having contact lenses with LEDs like what Dr. Michio Kaku has described on Sci-Fi Science, Physics of the Impossible?
The technology is getting easier, but in no way is it ready for the consumer space yet. I think we're probably at least 2 or 3 years away from that being something that is even safe, much less affordable.
I'm still trying to adjust to how you describe as no way are we even near. I'm thinking 20 years, you say 2 or 3 years.
I have to live like 3 months at a time. I can't help it.
I know. And then you'll say, oh, it's going to be a little while. And I'll think a year. And you'll say, well, 3 weeks. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
Russell Holly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
It's Russell Holly. He's a tech blogger for geek.com. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Corinne Gleckler, production assistants Kiram Shaban, Rose Joe, and Leticia Wiggins, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. And Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.